Nice old favorite from The Who, that's Baba O'Reilly. Phoebe Caddis preceded that with Never Be a Cool Girl. It was Calico the Band with California Dreamin'. Andrew Holcomb and the Neighbors with California. You're listening to Undercurrents. I'm Gabriela. Stay with us because Murray Porter is coming up in just a minute.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
Tune in to Cubby Cushy, Cubby Cush, Tuesday nights on KBOO. 2 hours of global bass with an emphasis on South Asia and the South Asian diaspora, and an even more special emphasis on the Punjabi diaspora. Hosted every Tuesday, 10 to midnight, by The Incredible Kid. This ain't world music, it's birth of a new world music.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. The challenges we face today are unprecedented and can be difficult to even think about without feeling paralyzed by anxiety and depression. And I'm speaking from personal experience here, folks. Climate change, war, political polarization, economic upheaval, the collapse of the industrial system, even nature. Altogether, these things create a planetary emergency of overwhelming proportions like never before in history. Yet, it is possible to strengthen our capacity to face these crises so that we can respond with resilience. And today's guest shares the tools for playing a role in a collective transition. Our guest today is Dr. Chris Johnstone, author of the book, Active Hope, How to Face the Mess We're In with Unexpected Resilience and Creative Power. Dr. Johnstone is an author, coach, and trainer for resilience and well-being, known internationally for his work on the psychology of cultivating positive impact in the world. His book, Active Hope, which is co-authored with Joanna Macy, has been translated into 18 languages, and his online courses for resilience and active hope reach people from more than 60 countries. He lives in the north of Scotland. Hello, Chris, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, what's the story behind how this book that you wrote with Joanna Macy, how did it come about?
So I've worked with Joanna for over 30 years. I met her at Findhorn in 1989. I did a week-long workshop with her when I was in my late 20s, and it was a life-changing experience. And I trained with her, and her work then was called Despair and Empowerment Work. It's about really how we face our grief, sadness, horror, alarm at what's happening in the world, but then also find our power to respond. And I just thought this work is so necessary that I felt a sense of, I want to give my life to this. This is what I want to do. I want to train myself to do this work. And so that's what I did. I started running workshops, training group work, and apprenticed myself to some of the people who were running these workshops in the United Kingdom, where I live. And after I'd been doing that for about 20 years, Joanna Macy was coming over to Britain, and I just had a sense, I want to interview her. I want to have a recorded conversation with her. And I didn't quite know what it was for, but I just had a strong sense of, I need to do that, particularly holding this question, what helps us face the mess we're in and find our power to respond? And Joanna had been doing this work for 3 decades. I've been doing this work for 2 decades by then. And so I wanted to have a conversation sharing, well, particularly drawing out from Joanna what she'd learnt, what she'd found most helpful. And I thought maybe it would become an article or something like that. But we had this conversation and recorded it, and it was such a great conversation. It was a mutual sharing of what we'd found helps, what makes a difference. And I thought, hey, this could go somewhere. Maybe we could have a collection of these conversations and turn it into a book. And then anyway, that's how the book came about. It kind of grew and developed through conversation and was published over 10 years ago.
Paul. Okay. Well, that's a fascinating process. Why don't you describe what you define as the great unraveling? Because, you know, as you point out in the book, an international survey of more than 10,000 young people suggests that that despairing feelings are widespread. Only 56% said they thought humanity was doomed, and 4 out of 10 were hesitant to have children. So you call it the great unraveling. What does that mean?
So there's loads of things that are going wrong in our world. And one approach is to see these different crises, whether it's some of the wars that are happening in Ukraine, for example, in Middle East, as entirely separate from each other. So there's wars, that's one issue, and you can focus on that. And then there's climate change, another issue. There's injustice, another issue. If you see all these problems as separate from each other, you don't see the patterns that combine them, or the patterns that underlie them, the patterns that join them together, the connections between them. And the connections between them are in different ways. One is in that there are similar issues, like deep causes behind many of these different issues. But also, when these issues act together, they create a whole that's more than the sum of the parts. So, for example, the civil war in Syria was, some observers could link that to worsening conditions from climate change, the fact that farms were in decline, more people moving into the cities, discontent there, that was a factor in triggering the civil war. That the war that's happening in Ukraine at the moment is not unrelated to the fact that Ukraine is also a place of lithium reserves that play a role in batteries, but also there's big oil deposits also off the coast of Ukraine. That and so what happens is our hunger for resources in what we can think of as an extractive economy. An extractive economy is based on extracting materials from the world, doing things with them, generating products, this kind of consumer society, and then also generating rubbish and creating toxic outputs. That whole way of living is leading our world to unravel. And the great unraveling is like an overall term, an umbrella term for the many different ways that our world is falling apart. And it helps when you're feeling a kind of sense of anxiety. You talked about depression, about how things are happening in the world. It's not just linked to one issue. It's not just climate change or injustice, but it's more a sense of we're on a downhill slope, that we're in a state of decline, that our world is falling apart in all kinds of different ways, socially, ecologically, spiritually, psychologically, in a way that leads people to look at the future and just feel their heart sink and have a sense of like, well, what are we heading for?
Right. And as you point out, we're kind of stuck, you know, in between two fears, you know, the fear of what will happen if we continue going the way we are, and the fear of acknowledging how bad things are, because doing so brings up such despair and makes us nervous and not necessarily more functional. And this is where hope comes in.
Yes, it's an interesting one, because I think facing how bad things are, it's a bit like acknowledging grief of someone close to you, or finding right. that you've got a really disturbing diagnosis, you know, that we don't know whether it's a terminal condition or whether it's going to lead us to a planetary health crisis that we're going to recover from. We don't know that. But what I like about, you talk about hope, hope has different meanings. One is linked to hopefulness. So the question, are you hopeful? And a lot of people, they look at the future and they don't feel at all hopeful, in a way where right. you can have a kind of sense of sagging resignation and a kind of switching off and emptiness, where life also becomes empty of meaning and purpose as well, because you just kind of think, what's the point? But another meaning right. of hope is about desire. It's about, what do you hope for? And that question, what do you hope for? There's a phrase, crisis can be turning point. And some people say, well, that's very nice, but I can't see it happening. But even if you can't see it happening, do you hope it will happen? Do you hope crisis will become a turning point? And if you do hope that, this term active hope, which I find so helpful, is recognizing that when there's something you hope for, if you're active in supporting your hope, your life lights up. It somehow enriches your sense of meaning and purpose, that in a way it gives us a kind of direction. You can say, well, okay, I really hope that crisis will become turning point, and I'm going to be active in seeking to make that more likely. Now you can say, well, how can you make crisis a turning point?
I was just going to point out, we hear so much negative. We hear so much negative reporting about how it is hopeless. You know, we're so far gone now that it would take 500 years to recover from the damage to the climate, stuff like that. So how can you have hope when you have these beliefs, these negative beliefs that tend to lead you towards despair?
So let's just take that statistic you gave, that it will take 500 years to recover. Now, first of all, we don't know that for sure. But do you hope that we'll be able to recover? Some people don't even believe we can recover, or that it will happen as quick as 500 years. So you kind of say, well, okay, I hope that we'll recover by at least 500 years. There's a lovely term I've come across recently. Utopia is like where there's a kind of ideal, you know, state. But a term I've come across is throughtopia. Throughtopia is a vision of the future where we make it through. And that, for me, I have that in my heart, you know. I kind of think, what do I hope for? I hope we'll find a way through. I hope right. we'll find a way through, that we'll develop some kind of throughtopia, that there will be another side of the crisis. Now, I can have that as a thought and a hope, and I can sit in my armchair and think that would be very nice. But active hope is where I put my life behind that hope and say, I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to do something about it. And when we really give ourselves to that hope, you think, well, okay, what can I do? What can I do from where I am? And if we come back to that phrase, crisis can be turning point, one of the most important turnings is turning up with an intention to play our part. And I say this because I worked for many years in addictions recovery work mental health service. And I worked a lot with people who completely given up hope of ever getting better. You know, their life had fallen apart. They had their own personal great unraveling. And it's so interesting to see how remarkable shifts can happen when people just really have a sense of what I hope for is. You know, it's not am I hopeful, because these people weren't. But what I deeply hope for is, and it's so important for me, that I'm going to show up today and just take it a day at a time. In today, am I turning up in support of my recovery? And if I turn up each day in support of my recovery, I make my recovery more likely to continue. Paul, over to you.
Yeah. As you point out, active hope is not just wishful thinking. It's a practice like Tai Chi or gardening. It's something that we do rather than we have. And that's such an important distinction, because I don't have hope if it depends upon me believing this or believing that. What good is that? You know, especially if it's hard to know, you know, it's not like we're all experts. So can you speak to this practice of active hope?
I find this so helpful. Like mindfulness, Tai Chi, yoga, each time you do that practice, you might feel a bit better. But you might not. You might feel just the same. But you have a trust that doing these practices supports well-being. They are contributing to well-being. And I think well-being is a direction you can move in from any starting point. And it's like saying, you know, me here now, facing what I face, feeling what I feel, what supports movement in direction of well-being? And there's personal well-being practices, but active hope is a practice for well-being, not just personally, but also collectively. It's about, and this is what I really love, because there's a phrase, a beautiful life. A beautiful life is one that's good for us and the world. And when you do the practice of active hope, you're contributing to the recovery of our world. And just, it might be even in small ways, but you say, okay, what can I do from here? Facing what I face, feeling what I feel, what can I do today? Might be a small step, might be a small action. But what we also wrote about in Active Hope is a different understanding of our power to make a difference. Rather than looking at an action by itself and say, what's that going to do? And kind of perhaps dismissing it with the phrase, not much. Whenever you do an action, you ask the question, what's that part of? What does it contribute to? And you had the phrase, the great unraveling is this larger story of the world falling apart. There is also another story, which is the story of the great turning. And the great turning is about the recovery of life, including human life on this planet, where we say, okay, what I want is well-being of life. I want the flourishing of life, including human life. Human life as part of the larger life on Earth. What if we were to have a shift where instead of being a cause of harm, we shifted the balance where we had more benefit, that we led to more benefit to the planet rather than harm? And that's a turning. And it involves turning up with an intention to play our part, but also turning away from things that cause harm, ways of being that cause harm, ways of organizing ourselves, ways of consuming or investing our savings, whatever it is. And then turning towards saying, what supports the flourishing of life? What can I do today that by itself, it may not do much, but there's a phrase, power with. Power with is nothing is ever by itself. And so your action is acting with other things. You say, what's it part of? What does it contribute to? What larger process of change happens through our choices, through our actions? And I think one of the core questions for all of us to face is what am I part of and what do I contribute to? And there's another side of that is what happens through me? You know, what happens through me is are we living the story of the great unraveling, where the great unraveling happens through us, through our choices, through our actions, through our patterns of consumption, ways of relating. And I know, you know, I cause more harm than I'd like to. There's more plastic in my life than is ideal. But I can turn up with an intention to say, hey, how do I turn away from that? How do I make some choices where I cause less harm? And move to choices where it's not just causing less harm, but it's actually bringing about some benefits.
Yeah, when you talk about this new story, the great turning, and you can even construe it, and you mention this in your book as a kind of a adventure story, but this is, you know, we have to let go of some old stories. One of them is what you refer to as business as usual. And this kind of like keeps us stuck in our habitual ways of doing things. So, you know, I like the way that you emphasize how important what the stories that we tell ourselves and what are the assumptions behind the stories that we believe in. You know, I think it really boils down to beliefs. If you don't believe, if you believe something, that sort of traps you in that paradigm, no matter what it is. And changing our beliefs or allowing our beliefs to evolve seems to be an important component here. Would you agree with that?
Sure. And it's really interesting because I think beliefs are part of it, but there's almost something deeper than belief. And it's like our deep knowing in our bones. And I think a lot of people have a deep knowing in our bones that the way we're going about things is not the best way. That there is a better way that we could find. And that's why I love the work that you're doing, Paul, personal development and cultural evolution. And these are such important terms. So personal development is like saying, okay, if I was to develop in a direction where I was to cause less harm, I was to move towards being, I mean, we talk about our ecological footprint, but there's a lovely phrase, what about our handprint? Our handprint is the benefit we leave behind us, both socially and ecologically. How can we leave behind some kind of benefit, not just at the end of our lives, but each day? You know, each day it's like, okay, what can I do today that someone in the future might thank me for? What can I do today that my own future self might say, hey, Chris, I'm glad you did that. I'm glad you showed up there.
This brings up a chapter. Your chapter 8 in the book is entitled A Larger View of Time, and how extreme short-term thinking is actually a fairly recent phenomenon. Because, you know, the chief of the Sioux Nation or something, who was the one who said 7 generations, you know, they think ahead 7 generations, but we don't do that. But we can learn to do that. And I love your take on how we should reorient ourselves towards time and our perception of time, because we're always in a hurry. You know, we want to, you know, get to the finish line. And, you know, it's, can you speak to this larger view of time?
It's so important. In a way, this is the crux of the matter, that what we're suffering from is a short-term view of time. And in a way, I think of my work in addictions recovery. That's what the issue was there too with addictions, is you're looking for something that has a short-term benefit but causes problems in the long term. So when you drink or you use, you might feel better for just a moment, but it's like the problem goes, but it comes back with interest. That you actually, it's like you steal away happiness from a time in the future. And what we're doing with expanding our timescape. So timescape is the expanse of time that we give our attention to. And just a lovely question is, what can we do that our future self, our future version of ourselves will thank us for? So that, you know, it might be, okay, I'm working on a piece of writing at the moment and it's hard work. I find writing so difficult sometimes. You know, part of me just wants to tear my hair out, and I might say, you know, why am I doing this? But I kind of think, okay, one day I might look back on this moment and say, hey, I'm glad you showed up, Chris. I'm glad you stuck with it. And when I hear that kind of encouraging voice, it kind of gives me a boost. Now what's going on there is I'm having a conversation really with my imagined self in the future. But what would it be like if we imagined people living 1,000 years from now? If we were to hold them in our awareness, I'm just thinking, I don't have grandchildren, but my sister does. And, you know, they're so deeply important to her. And what about her grandchildren's grandchildren? And what about their grandchildren? Because it almost seems that in our Western industrialized culture, we can care a lot about the next generation and care deeply and lovingly about the generation after that. But it's almost like there comes a point where we cease to be aware of their needs. And so that you can, for example, a lot of people have money invested in savings accounts for their children or grandchildren, but actually that money is being invested in, say, fossil fuels, which are making the future much more difficult for their children and grandchildren. Research shows that a child born in 2020 is about 7 times as likely to experience hardship from climate change as that child's grandparents. We're having benefit now, but in a way that pushes problems into the future. And so if we expand our sense of time and we factor in those who are coming after us and say, hey, how can we live in a way where we pass on something as good or better rather than something depleted and worse? And that's the turning. Right. That's the turning that's needed in our times.
Right. Well, that's very inspiring. You know, you talk about inspiration in the book too. In fact, you talk about so many things in the book. I wish we had a lot more time, and we don't really have very much more time at all. And I want to see, you know, I want to encourage people to read your book. It's an amazing book. And to open themselves to active hope, which is the title of the last chapter of the book. And in that regard, we've got a couple minutes. Can you kind of give our audience a little bit of advice or further inspiration?
So I love the phrase Project Active Hope. And what I mean by that is when you look at what's happening in the world and you don't feel at all hopeful, to recognize that we've got a project that we can take on in activating hope. And what I mean by activating hope is that you see hope as like an energy of engagement that can happen through you, through your choices, through your actions, through your turning up in each day. And when it does, it's a bit like electricity when it goes through a light bulb, you know, it lights the bulb up. And when we have active hope energy happening through us, it kind of lights us up, it enlivens us, it can leave us feeling more alive, it can strengthen our feeling of meaning and purpose. And so what I mean by take it on as a project is that you don't have to sort it all out straight away, but you say, hey, I'm going to show up with this. You know, if you've got a house that you're working on, you might think, okay, I know it's going to take me a while, but I start here and then I do that and then I do that. And it's the same with us and Project Active Hope. We can't do it all, but we can do what's ours to do. And so just holding this question, what's mine to do? One of the things we've developed is a free video-based online course in Active Hope Training. And Active Hope Training is this idea that Active Hope, this practice of showing up, starting where we are, facing what we face, identifying what we hope for, and being active to help make that more likely. That's a skill that we can get better at. We can become more skillful with this practice. And so Active Hope Training is looking at how do we strengthen our ability to show up and play our part. And so we've got this video-based online course. The website is activehope.training, and it serves as a companion to the book. Well, some people prefer videos to books anyway, but it's another pathway.
Right. Well, I love a lot of the other YouTube videos of you that I've seen. Well, I think we should close with what Greta Thunberg said, and you quote her in your book, it's never too late to do as much as we can. And I want to thank you, Chris, for being on the show. There's so much more we could talk about and explore, but we've run out of time for today. And I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is activehope.info. So you've got activehope.training, activehope.info. I imagine they're linked together, and that people can find out all about your work, et cetera, at activehope.info. But anyway, thank you so much for being with us today, coming from Scotland. It's amazing. And I really appreciate it. And I want to
thank you.
You're very welcome. And for those who may have tuned into Pathways late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of the book Intuitive Intelligence, which shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. Now, don't worry, you can play and or share this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Chris Johnstone, Dr. Chris Johnstone, author of Active Hope, How to Face the Mess We're In with Unexpected Resilience and Creative Power. Wow. Even the title of your book is so inspiring. And I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo every Sunday morning by Donald Altman or myself at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. And even better, podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's divination.com, as well as via iTunes, my YouTube channel, and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien, reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and Podcast. And thanks again.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Radio Station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County. We honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on. The Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tumwater, Watlala bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin, Kalapuya, and